down. Michael, throw it up there. We should be completely moved out of our house by Tuesday. So we have a new address. If anybody's interested in that, it'll come out in the newsletter as well. But I just don't want anybody in your, you know, that early. If you send out your Christmas gifts early, I want to make sure you have the right address, so it doesn't get lost somewhere. My mailman will just keep them. We're going to keep our same mailman. We're very thankful for that. 1327 East 19th Street. We're moving about six blocks, so it's kind of fun. Thanks for all the help. For those you got it and got a little bit wet and cold yesterday, but we got a lot done, and we're really grateful for that. It's coming together. So, did you catch that, Michael? The address? There it is. Perfect. All right. Cool. So we're in this fall season here, as we've launched Beggar's Gate. We've tried to establish a few things in terms of maybe even a. Not just new to us, but just an identity, a way of thinking about what the faith is to us. And so there was three phrases we started with, and through this whole fall, we're working on fleshing out what those phrases translate to, and really establishing our identity so that as we move forward, none of this is going away. This isn't a teaching we're going to move on from, but this will begin to continue to be the foundation of what we do and how we do it from here on. And so what we're talking about, whether you're here on a given week or not, I pray you go back and listen to the messages and you wrestle with these things, because this really is the foundation. Beginning after the first of the year, we have some choices to make. We're going to have some initiatives to walk in. So the phrases, let's review the phrases. Yes, you're getting it. This is so awesome. Go, don't come, or not come. Go, we're going to go. Now, all right, what else? Yep. Be not do, right? Be not do. Go, don't come. What else? Relationship, not religion or ritual, either one. And that's what the Christian world is famous for, is the first thing we say is, come, everybody come, look, come. And the culture is really tired of being told to come. They want to see something, and so go. A lot of what we're talking about is the be, not do, all right? Go, not come, be, not do, all right? And then relationship rather than rituals or religions. And so what have we talked about? What are the identities? Intercessors. But what is the intercessor? What identity does the intercession? It's just really one component. We spent a long time on it. But what is the identity that we've talked about? And it's this idea of being. Nope. Priests. Exactly. The relationship, not religion, is this idea of being a disciple, of being connected to God. And we're really going to start talking about what it looks like to go the next, moving on after tonight. So hang on to these identities. If you don't wrestle with these identities, eventually it's just going to start feeling really weird, because this is the foundation for how we're going to operate as a family of faith, okay? We are talking about worship continuing on. What were some takeaways from Chris's message last week? So there's this position of humility and humbling ourselves and bowing down. What else? Two or three big ideas he shared. Say it again. I'm sorry. Love God, not others. There's a position, there's an activity. And this idea of service being the way we live, our whole lives are a response of worship. It's not just, when we think of worship, which is what actually we're going to try to nail down a little bit tonight, this idea of this vertical praise, adoration, of giving our voice and giving our heart to God in this activity. But what Chris talked about a lot was this position of worshiper, that we're below him, that we exalt him, we lift him up. We have to have that idea about ourselves. Most of your challenges in life are going to result when you get that flipped. When the Christian life doesn't work, it's because you have that upside down and you've somehow made God the great big vending machine in the sky who is supposed to do what you think would make your circumstances better. And that by definition is not worship. You're asking God to worship you. If you don't own that, the Christian life is going to be very frustrating to you because you're going to keep wondering, why aren't you fixing this stuff, God? Well, because you're not God. There's a fundamental identity we have to rest in this when we talk about adoration. So there's this idea that worship is a statement of our position. And there's a couple common Greek words, and that's really, it's acts of service. It's this response. It's this position. But there's also this idea of adoration, of giving ourselves. If you, as men, and we're going to close tonight, you can gear up your courage because I'm going to ask you to do a little project tonight before we go home. If you want to hand the faith to your children, I have never, ever, personally, this is very anecdotal, limited sampling, but it's kind of evident when I see how many. I have never met a truly godly man who's having spiritual influence who does not enjoy the act and give his heart to the act of worship, not just the position of worship, but to really have a practice somehow that he quickly moves into this place that he is able to declare himself. There's this great debate raging in Christianity that worship songs are too girly, and some of them really are. I Run Into Your Arms is a little hard for a guy. I get that. But to be able to have enough confidence to say, I love Jesus, I adore Jesus, really does say something about you and your comfortability with your masculinity. That does not mean we are weak or somehow effeminate, because we are in touch with our hearts. And we know our heart is filled with gratitude and joy. I'm kind of an alpha. I'm rarely does anybody say, you're kind of effeminate. In fact, I don't think that's ever happened. And yet I am completely comfortable expressing a deep heart of love and affection for the God who loves me and saved me. And if you don't get there, if you don't do that, don't be surprised if your boys go, I don't get it. I don't get it. You have a responsibility to pass on your faith with your practices. If you hand them good behavior, there's very little as boring to a young man as just being a good boy. You got to give them something to give their heart to. They need to see you worship. They need to see you practicing spiritual things. I want to read a couple of verses here. There's a big idea in how God receives worship that may help you. I don't know if it will or not, but I want to give you this picture. Because do you have a clear understanding what goes through the mind of God when he hears not us, but you as a part of us? Okay? When he looks into your soul and sees and hears adoration, when he hears that right declaration, not only your position and your understanding of how great he is, but your willingness to communicate it in front of God and everyone without regard. David danced naked virtually. And he did not give a rip because he was in a place of worship. And he was willing to display that for all to see. We must. And I'm speaking to the men. Most women, not all, but most tend to enjoy singing and expressing song more than men. If you look, you can look at any choir in any high school in the country, unless it's a music school or they've recruited a bunch of guys, they struggle to fill the male parts. I get that. Now, while I really want to call the men to just man up a little bit, get over whatever it is that keeps you from being able to express yourself, I also want you ladies to understand that enjoying singing does not mean that you've really given your heart to Jesus and you're willing to profess it and confess it. There should be an outflow from all that we do, the roots of our life, that we sink our roots deep into in the scripture. It should flow into not only a position of worship, a humility, of this expanse between God and us, but the willingness to declare it. If you're not willing to declare it to God, all those relational skills, there's a very good chance you're not going to be able to express acceptance or praise or appreciation for other human beings, for your wife. All of your relationships are going to struggle. This is not a subset of your life called the 15 minutes. It's amazing to me how many people say, well, you know, music will be 15 minutes and we'll show up a little bit late. It's no big deal. It's no big deal. Do you understand that before they went into battle, God had established a choir of men to sing their way in? There was a whole branch of the Levitical priesthood. Their only job was to sing praises to God as they marched into battle. Do you think those were tough guys? Think they had courage? They didn't even have a sword. But their job was critical. Our job is critical because it mushes up and chops up the crunchy, stale, cold-hearted flesh that we have. It's not a manipulation. It is a spiritual practice to give ourselves wholeheartedly to worship. And I want to give you this idea of what happens to God, or what happens in the person of God when we bring him worship. I don't know if you've ever done a study on smells in the Bible, but it's there a lot. Not a lot, like every chapter, but it's just around a lot. You hear this idea of perfuming and incense and different things. It really is amazing. And when we offer a sacrifice of praise, it rises up to God. In John 12, 2 through 3, it's just this picture of this extravagant worship. So they gave a dinner for him there, for Jesus. And Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those reclining with him at the table. And then Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. And there's this picture of this incredible gesture, just filling the house. So everybody was going, what is going on? Oh, that was worship. That was worship. And there's in a number of the narratives, there's examples of where something similar to this happened. I'm going to read another one later. But in Genesis 8, verse 20 and 21, it says this: Then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took some of every clean animal and some of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. This is an amazing statement. And when the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground because of man. For the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. So he's saying, you haven't changed. Man hasn't changed. But because of this smell, this thing that goes, that represents something, neither will I ever again strike down every living creature as I have done. So somehow these offerings and the burnt offerings and the incense that's offered and the perfume, and there's these pictures of God being in touch. Do you ever wonder why there's smell? It's kind of an interesting thing to reflect on. In one way, incense was used to mask a lot of bad smells because people weren't all that clean and life kind of smelled. And so they would wave incense over themselves so we all smelt like burnt things, evidently. I actually thought about having some incense going today, but I didn't get around to it because we were moving. All my incense was packed away. But somehow this aroma rose up to God, and he goes, oh, that pleases me. Now, is it really the aroma? Do you think that God goes, ooh, I like burnt animals. That's good. Now you've got my attention. Barbecue. Or is it the heart that it represents? We're so confused about what is going to please God, and we feel like we have permission to just give and take according to what we think God is going to. Oh my, I don't have much to offer, and so therefore God won't be pleased. God doesn't really care what you offer. He cares about your heart and a heart of worship. It's what the aroma represents that pleases the Lord. When we worship, there's a smell that rises up to him. Genuine worship is extravagant. It's passionate. And guys, oh, no, I'm not passionate. No, if you ever do get married, or if you ever did get married, you probably didn't close the deal without a little bit of passion being expressed. Now, I realize you go back into your cave, and you forget how to be passionate. But almost every male knows how to be passionate with the right motivations. And then somehow we lose track of that. Oh, just, you know, that's not cool to be passionate. There are moments in your life, or will be moments in your life, where it is very cool to be passionate. And if we're not, we miss an opportunity. And every time we come together in worship, when we adore, when we exalt, when we give our heart, when we express a love and affection for Jesus, we have to bring our heart, love God with all our strength, with all our heart, with all our mind. We have to do that. Worship smells good to God. Thankfulness is such a huge part of that because it puts it in a right perspective. When your life is troubled, when your circumstances aren't what you think they should be, and you're tempted to think God's ripping you off, that's fundamental understanding that God has done good to you and he is going to continue to do good to you even if you have to slurp dirty water out of a tire track. Eternity, you will forget about it. Good is coming your way. This is the short, crummy part, and we can always be thankful if you have Jesus. You can always be thankful. And it changes everything when we're thankful. Worship at its core is this grateful response, declaring who God is. And I prayed it earlier, but we could never say enough just over-the-top things about God and his goodness. We go, that's a little too much. Tell me when to stop exactly. When I get to the end of God's goodness, who's going to say, nope, you just went too far? He's not worth that much praise. He is not that good. Would you ever be able to say that? So here's the picture. Anybody ever heard of Jim Gaffigan? Okay. Ever heard his bit on bacon? You should watch it. It's pretty good. Worship, thankful worship, adoring worship, it's like the smell of bacon. Does everybody like bacon? Can anybody walk by a tray of freshly cooked bacon, you walk in the house, and not nibble a little bacon unless you're really afraid of your wife? There's not enough for everybody. Don't eat any. Yeah, whatever. I'll just take a couple now. I'll have one less sandwich. No rules. The smell of bacon is in the air. It's over. I'm going to eat some. The only thing that comes close to bacon is McDonald's French fries, but that's another story. Bacon, it's just this amazing smell. Jeff Gaffigan, he describes it this way. Bacon is the only food that you wrap around other food to make it taste better. Thankfulness is like bacon to our prayers, to our worship. We wrap it around it and God smells it. And he goes, oh, that's awesome. Give me more of that. Not just barbecue. Forget the doves cooking from Noah, this is bacon. This is like the Cadillac of praise. When we give our hearts to God, it smells really good to God. You miss an opportunity. I think most women are this way. Maybe it's not true. I know my wife excels at this. She loves to please people with food. She makes it pretty. She makes it good. She gives her whole heart. Just to watch somebody go, wow, this is really good. And she just thrills her. Do you understand when you worship, God is going, wow, this is really, really nice. There's very little you can do for God. You cannot be righteous enough to make him go, wow, look at you. Good job. You can't be holy enough. But you can bring him something that causes him to go, oh, that's really, really nice. I really, really like that. It's the smell of bacon to God. It enhances Now it's interesting because the way bacon is made, when it's actually cured, I just was thinking of different ways that when we wrap our lives in worship, how it's kind of like this. And one of the things that worship does is it preserves our heart. It orders our heart again, freshly. Do you do anything, men, to keep your heart stirred up for love for your wives? I mean, do you practice that? I have to. I have practices, and sometime I'll teach out of Proverbs 5 and help you understand. It is a command. Every man will grow cold towards his bride just because of the nature of us. There's a command to keep your heart hot for the bride of your youth. And that takes discipline. Worship is a discipline that brings us, and it preserves our heart. It wraps our heart in something that will keep it from getting rotten and stale and cold. It enhances our petitions. It makes them smell better. When we wrap our requests before God, Philippians 4, 6, and 7, don't be anxious for anything, but in everything, with prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving. So we take what we need, we wrap it in bacon. We say, look, God, this comes from a fundamental understanding that you are good and I love you and you're awesome, but I really could use this thing too. And it's not a manipulative thing. It keeps our heart right so that even our petitions get refined, they get preserved. It makes the offering acceptable. God goes, oh, because you can say thank you and not be thankful. So don't con God or don't try to. God, will you do this and do this and this? You ever be with a bratty kid who says, can I have that? 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 And no one ever says thank you. Eventually, you just go, yeah, whatever, here, take it. Thankfulness brings out a joy in giving. And I'm kind of using this adoration, praise, thanksgiving as kind of a fundamental understanding of what it means to worship. It's declaring something true about God. It makes our petitions taste better in our mouth, quite frankly. It does, really, really does taste better when we have a heart that's really filled with gratitude for God. And in our arrogance, we shake our fist at God, why aren't you fixing my stuff? And our petitions become daggers, venomous. Do this! Rather than a position of, man, I've already got so many cool things, and I'm so grateful. And this would be cool too. It really is a big deal. And it certainly makes our petitions smell better to God. When we worship, God smells bacon cooking. It's an irresistible smell to Him. Worship should be expressing the depth of our love to God, our hearts to God. It should be purging our hearts. You understand that a lot of the Psalms, I think it's up to one-third of them, are actually lamenting. They're actually grumbling Psalms. You ever heard the word, do not grumble? Well, the psalmist evidently didn't get that memo. The problem is not grumbling. The problem is who we grumble to. When we grumble to each other, this sucks. That's grumbling. When we go, God, this really hurts, and I don't like it, He goes, tell me about it. Let's talk. It purges our hearts when we declare life is hard. Do you think that's a surprise to God? He ordains certain pain in our life to bring more faith. It's how He trains us. It's how He draws us back into relationship. It's a part of Him drawing deeper understanding of that it's not about this life and your circumstances. He ordains pain. I don't like it. I don't like it when you're in pain. I hate it. But I know I believe in a sovereign God. And I'm happy to grumble with you to God. Because He's the only one that can actually do anything about it. It's also committing our hearts to God. This idea of renewing a vow week by week. It's so interesting to me that this repetitive thing, and we're going to break bread here at the end when we conclude, this picture of repeatedly going back and celebrating and worshiping and remembering and thanking. It is so important for our hearts because our hearts will grow cold. The word used in Hebrews 12 at the end, it's describing this passage of where it's comparing the old covenant and new covenant. And the writer of Hebrews, and I'll just read it real quick. It's right at the end of Hebrews 12. Therefore, let us be grateful, 12:28. Therefore, let us be grateful for receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken. Thus, let us offer to God acceptable worship with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. He's not this happy little grandfather type. He is a God who takes deadly serious what your life is going to result in, and his kingdom. And his kingdom will not be shaken, and you cannot manipulate it. But when we worship, when we give that sense, now the word worship here, again, this is probably the more common use in the New Testament, but the idea is this, and you probably heard this, but it's an expression like a dog licking a master's hand. How many are cat lovers in the room? Okay, so you won't get this. We'll have to figure out another way to explain this to you guys later. But how many dog lovers are in the world, or in the room? Yes, see? Excellent. Cats are fine, I'm kidding. But cats don't often sit and lick your hands. They don't sit there and look at you and go, "You're awesome, man." Most cats look at you and go, "I'm awesome." Actually, we're a lot more like cats. But that idea of this full attention, when you come in the room, the dog will just sit there and just want to be with you and look at you and give its full attention and just celebrate the fact that you're in a relationship with it. And it's just lovingly, tenderly licking his master's hand, or the kissing of a ring. It's the sense of in that posture of humility, of great joy in relationship, expressing a delight. We're not going to lick each other's hands. But that sense of, wow, God is amazing. And I really, really adore him. Again, man, I know that can be a hard thing to think about. But that really is something we have to cultivate. Luke 7 is a longer version of this picture of Jesus being extravagantly worshipped. Verse 36, one of the Pharisees asked him to eat with him, and he went into the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. And behold, a woman of the city who was a sinner, when she learned that he was reclining at a table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of ointment, and standing behind him at his feet. This is interesting. I don't know if I've ever noticed that. She actually stood behind him. In this incredible position. She wouldn't even come in front of him and be seen by him, but in this incredible position of humility. Weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head and kissed his feet and anointed them with an ointment. So if you feel a little weird, a little exposed, when you give your heart and worship, imagine this extravagant picture. We're so good at trying to keep the letter of the law, and we are so bad at passionately expressing the goodness of God and our gratitude to him. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this is and who is touching him, for she is a sinner." And Jesus answered him and said to him, "Simon, I have something to say to you." And he answered, "Say it, teacher." Tells him this story. A certain moneylender had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii and the other 50. When they could not pay, he canceled the debt of both. Now, which one of them will love him more? And Simon answered, "The one, I suppose, for whom he canceled the larger debt." And he said to him, "You have judged rightly." Then turning toward the woman, he said to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet, But she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but from the time I came in, she has not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she has anointed my feet with ointment. Therefore, I tell you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much, but he was forgiven little, loves little. And he said to her, your sins are forgiven. Then those who were at the table with him began to say among themselves, who is this for even forgives sins? Your faith has saved you. Go in peace. What do you think is true of your understanding of how much you've been forgiven if you have a hard time worshiping God? What do you think God will say about you? You know, in all of these identities, by the way, you are responsible for them. This is why I'm so adamant and so passionate about trying to hand them to you. Because if I don't hand them to you, you're still responsible. You have your Bible. But I'm taking great pains to try to bring this out. And Chris and I together are really trying to move us to this understanding of these identities, speaking very strongly, as clearly as we can. Because there will be a day, and your life at this time is being blessed, ordered, received based on your ability to walk in these identities. What kind of grade do you get as a disciple? If you're looking at your life and you're standing before the Savior and say, he's saying, be my disciple. How do you grade yourself? When you look at this idea of being a priest to the God Most High, what kind of grade do you give yourself? I'm not saying we don't fail. I'm saying your understanding of how you order your life, what you're giving your life's energy to, how are you doing? In giving yourself to vital community where the people that God has given you in your family of faith become central or they become irrelevant. What is your grade? As a worshiper, when we come together, God looks around this room. What is your grade? And do you care? I desperately care. I do not want to stand before my God and go, I just didn't care. I just didn't care. I wanted to do my own thing. It wasn't important enough for me to change my patterns and behaviors and do the best of my strength in these identities. I give all of my strength to them. Whatever I am doing in the spiritual world, I want to give all of my strength to it. Every person I meet, I'm a witness. Every person I meet, I want to outserve. Every person I meet, I want to be praying for and interceding for. Day by day, I want to be filled up and walk with God. I don't want to miss his voice. And when we gather together, I don't care if my voice is pleasant to anyone else. I want God to smell bacon coming out of me. Reminder, men, in this activity, I get this. We bring strength, not beauty. We bring strength. Many of us probably have better voices than we think, but most of us don't practice it. And it is a learned skill. Women, you bring beauty to this. There's very few women who can sing louder than a man. But what an angelic sound when the feminine voice is raised. I just imagine I always imagine angels as the feminine. That's the sound I hear. Feminine harmony to me is like, it gives me goosebumps. I love it. But without the strength that men bring, the practice is weak. Love God with all your strength. Do we do that? What we do together in worship will only be an outflow of what you do privately. Will only be an outflow. If you're not, almost every morning, while I'm reading, I have worship music going. trying to soften my heart. I don't wake up. I wake up ready to do things. And I do wake up ready to make my life count. But I usually wake up ready to run out the door and not have my heart in a position of worship, in a place of rest, in a place of celebration. And so I turn on Pandora hymns for worship, and sometimes some Lecrae, if Brad's not still sleeping next door. And I stir up my heart with worship. And I sing in my heart. Because when I come together here, I want God to smell bacon. If I don't practice it there, it'll just be fake here. We only bring what we are. You know, we can come read a verse together. If the word of God is not living and active in you day by day, there is a spiritual implication. What flows out of us is the sum total of what we bring is what we do privately. That's all we can bring to God. And I want to bring strength because that's all I can bring. There is an overemphasis of this idea that, and we've talked a little bit about this, that worship, you know, 15 years ago, there was no such genre as worship music. Do you understand that? Now there's just a certain kind of song that, well, that's a worship song. It used to be praise. It used to be hymns. Then there was contemporary stuff, and a lot of that was kind of folk songy kind of stuff. But the idea of a genre of music called worship music is not that old. And now it becomes, oh, we had a good time of worship. Well, worship is when we're praying for Nepal. Worship is every time we give thanks with our mouths. Every time we acts of service can be forms of worship. I actually build homes. It's one. I'm a very large scale sculptor. Okay, I like big canvas. And the way I design and build houses and do projects is an act of worship to me. I'm demonstrating who I am as a human being, who God made me to be, the skills, everything about me, I express it in worship when I work, especially with my hands. When I tune a bicycle, it's in worship. That's how I think about it. We have to have this understanding. Musical worship is very important because it does attach our hearts to truth. If it didn't, if we weren't going to attach our heart and get a little bit passionate about it, we might as well forego the melody, okay? We can just stand up and read lyrics together. If it's all about the truth, we don't need music because music is what activates the emotive in our lives. And there's why certain minor keys are so popular. Is because it does something to our heart. It engages them. It softens them. And if we pass on that, we miss the opportunity to love God with our heart. There is historically in Western Christianity, not way history, because I think men were really, really good at this. Almost everyone knew how to sing parts. It was just part of the culture. You knew what you were, bass or baritone or tenor or whatever. And you could sing parts because that was part of the educational system. Music was something you did, not something you pushed a button for. It was something you engaged in. We've lost a lot of that. I don't know if you've ever been involved with a church. There's some of the Church of Christ sect of Christianity. They have absolutely no musical instruments. I mean, there's nothing there. And man, can they sing. You just step in there and there's nine things going on. Sounds like you're in a symphony choir. You go, oh my goodness, because everybody has engaged. Everybody has an instrument and they all play it. And it's their voice and it's amazing. For the rest, we've come to this place where corporate worship becomes, well, you worship any way you want. You worship whatever seems right to you. That's not what we do here. We give up our right when we come into community. And if someone asks us to clap in worship, we should clap. If someone asks us to raise our hands, we should raise our hands. We give up our right to express our own individuality when we come in corporate worship. But there's this idea that you get to be independent in a group and somehow that's going to please God. It's just, I don't get it. We're destined to become a show from up front here somewhere. And I've seen it over and over again. And the bigger the band up here, the more hands get folded and the more people sit and watch out there. That doesn't smell like bacon. We have to excel at this. We have to excel at this. Some will say what we respond, well, I just don't have a very good voice. I'm not very good at it. Okay. Well, here would be God's response. See these angels over here? I've heard them sing. You all stink. None of you are any good. Because I've heard them. It's your heart that he's listening to. What smells good to him is not the tone and the pitch and the harmonies. What smells good to him is your heart offered in worship. Angels can't give me what you can give me. They can declare, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty," all day long, but they cannot do it with faith. And they cannot do it with thankfulness from redeemed sinners. Because they, by definition, they can't do it by faith, because once you can see, it's no longer faith. We won't be able to worship by faith in heaven. We'll worship, but it will no longer be an expression of faith. It will no longer be an expression of trust. It will no longer be an expression of getting control of our hearts. It will just be the condition of our hearts day after day after day after day. Today, you have a choice to offer to God a worship that says, "Wow, that smells good." Because it represents the very thing that he treasures most out of this planet is the faith of those who love him. It's the only thing in the spiritual economy that turns his head, not your righteousness. He gave you your righteousness. He imputed you your righteousness. That was his doing. But what you can give him is faith through worship. I've heard different ones say, you know, I'd really like to get involved with music. And in fact, I knew one guy that was asked to take a break from it for a while, and there's just this great offense. And I go, "Well, here's what you need to do. I need to see you out there in worship before you worry about being up here in worship. If you want to have influence, worship where you are. Someone will notice. Someone will notice. It is completely disingenuous to think that somehow I have something to offer up here if I'm not offering it as a member of the body of Christ. You want to lead worship? Lead your own heart. This idea of we have to be in some position or some place in the room to somehow have it matter, it continually amazes me. There's this sense of anonymity when you're sitting out there. Do you understand people up here can see you? They see your face. They see if your mouth's moving. They see your eye. I can tell if you're bored from here in the back of the room. No one's hiding. And I'm just a human being with relatively poor eyesight. You think God could tell what's flowing out of your heart with this posture? That does not smell like bacon. Maybe really burnt bacon. There's that point where you go over the edge. It doesn't smell so good anymore. We can bring this passivity and think it doesn't matter. Well, do you believe that? I mean, is that really the condition? Do you just need to be stirred up? We can always do better at calling people, reminding people. But at some point, you have to own the fact that someday God is going to say, "You know what? You really phoned it in here. You had this opportunity to please me by taking a risk and expressing something to me and to the community that I put you in about me, and you said, it just doesn't matter to me. I'm not really afraid of that. It's not something I would look forward to. I don't want to bring shame to Jesus. I don't want to know that it just doesn't matter, God. I'm sorry. I don't want to do that. when the plate passes by, I don't want to know that. I just said, no, I don't care about children who have no parents in the poorest country in the world. I need a Big Mac instead. Something is way more important to me than the children that God said everyone is precious to him. I don't know how people live. I'm not a guilty person. I don't walk around in angst. I just want every minute of every day to actually count. Because in a few years, and not very many years, I'm going to stand before him. And I want to go, this was awesome. What a ride. I screw up enough by accident. I don't want to do it because I just make a bad choice continually over and over again. I've got plenty of weakness that I'm going to be ashamed of. But to just check out and say it doesn't matter, I'm going to choose to ignore these things. I don't want to do it. Here would be my call here. A full heart equals a full voice. If your heart is full of the grace of God, love of God, the gratitude for what Jesus did, it should lead to a full voice. And I'd like us to offer a sacrifice of praise tonight. And I'm going to ask the men to do... Oh, by the way, I want to mention this. Cause for celebration. Pass the plate tonight, and about $450 was raised up, which should be... I know there's a few other gifts. It would please me. I don't know if you want to pray about it a little more, but I'd love to be able to send $1,000. That would be a good doable goal if you can seek the Lord, and maybe that doesn't have to be done tonight, right? So we can continue that if you want to budget some more of your Christmas money, or you can forego the gift you were going to give me, and you won't need the address. Just put that right into the bicycle inner tube fund for Nepal. That would be awesome. Here's what I'd like you to do, men. I'm going to ask the men to sing as we break bread. And then when we get through the song, I'd like the men to just express, ask for nothing. Be very disciplined, okay? It's really hard. It's really hard. If you hear the word saying, would you, or please, stop, because you're starting to ask for something. Okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to ask the men to please stand, move to the outer circle of the room, and the women, I'd like you to be bathed in the worship of the men. Now, I'm going to let you define what a man is here, okay, for the young men, okay? So if you're in high school, I would welcome you into the sphere of manhood. If you don't want to take that responsibility, you can stay seated. But high school on up, I would love for you to stand in a circle around this room, and we're going to put some lyrics up here and just sing a cappella. And Paul, you can come up and help me here if you would. We're going to sing "To God Be the Glory," and we can pass the bread and the cup around as we're singing this. We'll sing it through twice, and then we'll spend a little time praying. If there's somebody not singing or projecting in your circle, if you put an elbow in their solar plexus, they will go, whoa! It'll get a lot louder. Okay? Now, you guys got to be able to see the screen so you can spread out around here. We're a little weak over here. We are, okay? Careful.
So how about God? God. The glory, great things. Is that a good key? So,
nope, too high. Down, head down a step. God be the glory. We're men. Yeah. Keep it down. Okay. If there aren't a lot of cracking voices, you're not trying. Okay. I'd like you to bathe the room in the sound of your voice, declaring God's glory. Ladies, you can start that around, and we'll pass it around to the men afterwards. Okay? Loudly.